Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to jump in quickly and let you know about the release of the audio version of my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, narrated by David A. Knesser. If you want to support the show, you can buy it wherever audiobooks are sold. Links are also in the show notes. Now on to my guest for today, Sam Kamani, tech innovator, CEO of ProductUn, and most recently, the co-founder of Insider, an app that helps people in learning about investing without risk. Sam grew up in India and moved to New Zealand to attend college. After college, he made himself useful by offering to help businesses wanting to do e-commerce when only 1% of businesses were done online. He quickly made a name for himself as the go-to person to help businesses gain traction online. From there, he started several businesses, first selling supplements online and then turning his attention to digital products. His company, ProductUn, helps entrepreneurs identify and build a marketable product in the SaaS and mobile app spaces. In addition to running his companies, Sam has authored 2 business books and host the podcast, Want Money, Got Money. Sam's advice for entrepreneurs is to start small and to build a minimum viable product first. Finding your buyers before building to scale is key. He also believes playing the long game and getting people engaged and interested in your product is far more important than making the quick sale. Now, let's get better together. Sam Kamani, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me. So looking forward to this.
Oh, yeah. Well, me too. I mean, you had me on your pod, which is about to drop in probably a week or so. And yes, we met through Brendan over at Master Talk, who we both have a problem trying to say his last name. So we're just going to say Brendan at Master Talk. Thank you. We thank you for introducing us. And it's super interesting. You've got a lot of really cool things going on. But before we talk through all that, you know, the question I always like to ask is, so why don't you tell me how you got to do what you're doing today?
That's a very good question. I've had a long journey, as all of us have. So about 19 years ago, I moved to New Zealand from India. 19 or 20 years ago, I moved to New Zealand and studied here and all that. And then I couldn't find a job, as with a lot of new sort of fresh graduates, immigrants, all that stuff, international student. It was very, very challenging. I did all sorts of odd jobs. But at the same time, I always try and give first. So I started helping businesses to get traction online. And this is, we are talking about 2004 when I was graduated out of university, 2003. And slowly, my name started to spread that, hey, this guy can help you get traction online or get customers online. Online wasn't that big back then. Like globally, less than 1% of all commerce was done online. So e-commerce made 1%, 99% was retail, physical in shops. So this is a different world back then. So yeah, so that's how I started. And that's how I managed to get into my first business. We sold health supplements, nutraceutical products. We had our own brand. And that was my first sort of startup, you can say, purely e-commerce in 2007. And I grew that company quite a bit. I sold that in 2015. And that was my first exit. After that, I wanted to go back into something that's not a physical product, that is something a lot more scalable. So I went into esports. Once again, I grew that startup from 80,000 monthly active users to 300,000 monthly active users in about 8 months. Wow. I managed to become COO and got a small stake in the company and all that. With that, I was based in Bay Area, pretty much where you are. In 2018. And then that got acquired by another agency who liked the technology. So that was 2018. And then I got together with a friend of mine while I was still working at and looking at what's the next thing I want to do. So I started an agency with a friend of mine, and we help people build SaaS products, mobile apps, all those things. In 2018, we started that in around 2018. However, in 2020, me and one of my developer, we have been working on building a product to gamify the whole trading and investment experience. We want to get more people excited about investing. You won't believe it, but you know, in countries like India, 98% of people own no stocks or cryptocurrency or anything.
I mean,
like
that's the way it is here in the US. Not very many people own stock. I mean, generally, they may have a pension fund,
401k, yes. But you know, surprising thing, 48% of families don't even have that.
Yeah.
So when the last 80 years, when the stock market in US has done exceedingly well, the bottom 50% are not going to see any effect. It's like saying that, oh, the stock market is up 40% this year or in 2020. Does that mean everyone is 40% richer in US than a year ago?
No,
than
not
in 2019?
Not
even close. It's like one in three in New York State now relies on food stamps and things like that. And like it's insane, the numbers. Like the bottom 30% is just not getting any benefit. And because I used to be like one of those person who never invested, never looked into it, it's just because I found it all too complex, I found it too boring, and I felt it was too risky. And it is risky when you don't know what you are doing. So I want to remove these three things by building this platform called Insider. So Insider spelled E-N-S-Y-D-R. Insider, you can check it out. And basically, we made it like a game. We have removed all the risk. So you can predict the price, whether it's of Tesla stock or Bitcoin or whatever it might be. And if you get things right, you win points, which will later on convert into rewards. We are still building this platform. It's just in beta version at this stage. But we seem to be getting traction. We are getting like a user every few hours. So
yeah, I've signed up for it. I did some, you know, played around with it a little bit. It's interesting. It's kind of, you know, I like the premise of that and the education piece. I mean, you know, even like cryptocurrency, people are like, how do I participate in cryptocurrency? So it's really complicated because they make it that way, because you got to be like a geek. And I mean, I even own cryptocurrency, but I don't understand it. And I should, because I have a degree in engineering. You would think I'd understand it, but I don't. Same with investments. And so, you know, that's just really cool. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. But you had the firm that you talked about, you know, in the 2018 timeframe, which I think you're still involved with.
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about what that is? Because I remember looking at it.
Product Done? Yes.
Yeah, Product Done. That's the one.
Yes.
And what's cool about like Product Done, like I love the action of we'll just get it done for you. But
yeah,
why don't you explain, it's a little bit different than a normal agency, which I really like, because I personally feel that, you know, everyone's got great ideas. The ability to execute an idea is important, needs to be democratized, for lack of a better word, because sometimes even a good idea can't make it, and you want to be able to have more shots on goal, right? So once you, explain Product Done a little bit, because it's pretty cool.
Sure. So basically what we do is we work with early stage founders or tech startup founders, especially non-technical founders who have an idea. They might have an idea for a SaaS product or a mobile app, and they come to us, they explain the idea to us, and we take them through a process. So we help them build a roadmap for their startup, and then we help them build a very small first version, or in some cases, like a minimum viable product that they can afford or pay weekly so they can test it out. In some cases, MVP is not even required. So we just say that, hey, you know, why don't you go and find some people who are ready to use it, or who would commit to using this, however you want to get that commitment, whether it's by a credit card or however it is done. First find out if it is even needed. So that's the thing we first say to our clients. So we have multiple projects that we are helping people build. However, that is all in theory. In reality, most founders don't want to build an MVP. They want something massive. They don't want to start with just a one-room house and get on the property ladder. They want to start with a mansion with 3 tennis courts and 5 swimming pools and 18-car garage. So it is, of course, a lot easier than... So it's kind of, I end up doing a lot of education work for people in a way by explaining to that hey, like, build an MVP for, see if anyone even uses it, see if anyone wants it. And you know, the other thing is that if people use your incomplete product, then you have a much higher chance that someone will use a complete product. 100%. If you build a complete full product and no one is using it, then where do you go? It's pretty much money lost.
Oh yeah. I've been at companies like that. So yes. I know all too well I got a great idea. I'm going to go spend a lot of time on it. Build. And then, no one wants to buy it. With like hardware companies, that sometimes, I mean, it's hard not to build hardware, but
it is very hard. Yes.
But you know, it's just so, I just wish, it's a good way to go, because a lot of times, literally, it's all about which idea or which incarnation of the idea is going to work. And the sooner you find that out, the better.
Yeah.
And
you know, I would give you, can I give you like a practical
suggestion?
Like, if it's a hardware company, I would be tempted to do like a very small ad campaign based on just the graphical prototype of how it would look like, mm-hmm. as if it is live, and get like, you know, not even pre-order, sell to 10 people. And then as soon as they pay, contact them and say, thank you so much for your support. We would like to refund you your money. We are building this. We want to see that there is a demand, there is a need. And not only we'll refund you, we'll give you 10%, 20%, whatever, 50% off for the product when it is ready, and we'll contact you. So then you really know, because, you know, people, when you ask people, they say anything. Because they want to make, they're nice, and they want to make, they don't want to Piss you off when
that's true. That's so like, true. I love that.
It's like, you know, it's like if a mother is showing her baby to you, you're not going to say, "Man, that baby is ugly." You're not going to say that. If an entrepreneur full of enthusiasm has come to you and showing you their baby that they are so passionate about, you're not going to say, "Man, this idea sucks. You need to go home and cry in a corner." So people say anything, but people really vote with their wallets. So, you know, follow the money kind of thing. So if people are really happy to buy it, if it's a hardware product, then yes, then that is it. You are onto something. Then it is worth investigating, worth building a prototype.
Totally. No, I'm totally with you. And I've learned this the hard way. Again, you know, I've been doing this entrepreneur gig for 25 years, and there's been so many times where it's just been, oh, how did we miss this? But, you know, nowadays it's a lot easier to do just that prototype, especially software. I mean, that's why I like, you know, product done, your product done idea concept is so much better. I mean, put a little skin in the game, got to spend some money. Okay. Like, that means, are you committed? I mean, I was listening to a podcast. It's the founder of Turing, which do you know who Turing is? Have you heard of Turing?
I have heard of it, but I haven't looked into it a lot. So
yeah, so they're a company that does development for hire. So basically, you know, find the top developers all around the world and hire them. And
it's a bit like TopTal.
Exactly, but they focus only on developers. So they're only on technical developers. And so Vijay, their CTO, I think it's their CTO and co-founder, was on a podcast called Productive AI with my friend Troy. And they were talking about how they use AI to make sure that there's a fit, you know, with the developer. But he said this concept about founder market fit, which I've never heard before. He was the first one to say this. And I'm like, that is so true. It's like, you may have this great idea, but that you may not have the skills to execute that idea. And you just may not be for you. So this whole idea of your product done thing, and is there any way that you just sort of evaluate whether or not whoever is going to come to y'all with a bag of money and an idea, if you're like, yeah, maybe that you shouldn't be doing this. Do you have that kind of, how do you do that?
Just openly, like, the thing is that the first thing is that it is a lot of risk for a founder. So we want to remove the risk for a founder for them to go and test it out, to try it out. That is the first thing. So we don't charge like lump sum in the, like, a lot of app development companies, they are like 50% upfront, 50%. So if an app is going to be, I don't know, 40,000 to develop or 30,000 to develop, they'll be paid 15,000 upfront, 15,000. But so many times, as you know, with software, the projects go nowhere. It ends up with full of bugs because the founder cannot limit their expectations and the number of features they want. They want everything. They want Salesforce from day one. They want like Facebook and LinkedIn Twitch and everything combined on day one. So it's like, it's just not going to happen. It's a recipe for disaster. So what we do is we work with them hourly that, hey, look, these are these are the features, say, if we are building, we build one thing at a time, you pay us for this small part, we build that small part. So we go that way. So it's really manageable for them. So they can manage their cash flow, and pretty much anyone can afford to build a product when we do it that way. The second thing is that, as you know, entrepreneurship is not a destination, it is a journey. Most founders, they might not have the founder product fit or the founder market fit initially.
Founder market fit, yeah.
Yes. Like but as they progress in that journey, they would learn. Just like what you're doing now is very different to what you're doing 5 years ago. But what you're doing 5 years ago has led you to this? So what, when they get started from there, you know, they, a lot of them are working for a bank, or they have their small business, or they want to move into entrepreneurship and they want to be a tech startup founder. So they, when they get started, at least they have a hope of making mistakes, learning from them and going from there on. So, because just like, you know, the first post that you write on LinkedIn is not going to go viral. First post you make on TikTok,
or your first podcast will.
Yes, is not going to go viral and be same level as Tim Ferriss. You know, so yeah, it's totally fine. It is okay. It is okay. Give yourself that permission to fail, and that's why spend less, build a MVP, do it what you can without even an MVP. Build a community first around your product. If it's a B2C, of course. If it's a B2B, get one commitment from one business, one enterprise that they are ready to use your product. You know, whatever you can do without even building, do that first. Start your journey. Because if you never start, you'll never reach. You won't be playing like Kobe on day one, but you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, it's the barrier to entry for like apps and other things that has been the real, I don't know if it's like the real, well, what I'm trying to say is that like the great thing about now having this sort of development strategy where, like, no code is an example where, you know, yes, you can build a lot of things just to sort of test it out, because we all know it's all about like seeing what works and what you, the idea you start with is hardly ever the idea you finish with, because
absolutely
you learn. And that learning process, like you said, like when someone puts their credit card down and says, I want to buy that, that's the signal. Every yes other thing is a vanity metric, in my opinion. And this has yes taken me 25 years to learn.
Yes.
The only metric that matters is sales.
Yeah. Actually, can I give my opinion on that?
Yeah, to, yeah, of course.
Over
yeah
time, I have learned there are two metrics that counts. And ooh, there is another metric that ooh is even more worth it than sales. If wow I had a choice between sales and the other thing I'm going to tell you, I would choose the other thing, and that is engagement. Go for engagement every single time over sales, because okay, because to give you an example, if you had an opportunity to make $50 right now on the spot, or choose the option B, which is make $500 million in 5 years' time, which one would you take? Also, the other thing is the $500 million is tax-free. The $50 right now, you will have to pay 30% tax.
I would take the $500 million in 5 years.
Yeah. So if you want $500 million in 5 years, build something that has engagement. Do not worry about that instant $50 cash. That's all I'm saying. Play the long game. And to give you an example, it is like whether it is Facebook or Instagram or Tesla or any successful multi-billion dollar company you would see, they did not, or Instagram or WhatsApp or Clubhouse, they don't optimize immediately for the $50 immediately. They optimize for completely dominating the market in 10 years' time. So yes, Amazon didn't make any money in profits for the first 24 years, but that is fine because they're playing the long game in life and in everything, pretty much. Anyone who plays the long game wins. Anyone who plays the short game loses. And the short game focuses on sales, the long game focuses on engagement. So I focus on engagement. For Insider, I'm not going to charge people anything for the first 3 years because I want to make sure that there is engagement. People are coming back over and over again. You can get sales by doing Facebook ads, Google ads, all that, but that is not real. That is not sustainable. I feel like advertising is just a tax on a bad product.
So I agree with you on that. I have been really struggling with the whole ad game, the digital ad game. And I agree. But then, okay, so engagement's important. But so then how do you feed yourself when you're trying to
Go for investment. If you want to completely dominate the market, if you want to build that next $80 billion company, you have to go for investment. It's like, look at the top 50 companies in any country, in any city, in any state, and I can guarantee you that all 50 of them are funded when it comes to tech startups, software tech startup.
So then how do you measure engagement? I'm intrigued by this because...
Okay, engagement, like Clubhouse. You know of Clubhouse, right?
I'm familiar. Yes. I haven't been invited yet. I'm not slighted
so,
by that.
So, you know, people are spending even 10 hours on it, some people.
Wow, really?
Yes, a day, and consistently, 8 to 10 hours. It is so, so addictive. It is, do they have to, did you ever see an Google ad or a YouTube ad of Clubhouse, join Clubhouse, buy Clubhouse?
No.
Exactly. When the product is good, you will not have to do any advertising. You know, in 2019, General Motors spent nearly $3 billion in advertising. Ford spent $2.4 billion. Fiat Chrysler spent $2.2 billion. Do you know how much Tesla spent on advertising?
Yeah, I know the answer.
$0.
It's zero.
Yes. Same thing. Did WhatsApp have to advertise when it first started? Did Facebook have to advertise when it started? Did Instagram have to run ads in newspaper and yellow pages? No, they don't have to. When you have product market fit, when you have really high engagement, all that takes care of itself. When you have really high engagement, people are stuck to your product. Same with TikTok.
Right. So let's say you don't want to be this behemoth thing. Let's say you want to have, I don't like the term lifestyle company, but I'll use it because that's a term
that's
of
fine.
Art. Let's say I want a lifestyle company. I want to build product done. Like I want to have something like that. How do I know that something either like product done or some product that I'm building that I don't want it to be massive?
It is a service company. Product done is a service company. If you want to build service company, then that's fine. Service company, you are revenue positive from day one. We are charging hourly. So we pretty much the first client comes in, you start charging them. And that is absolutely fine.
What about other niche products that won't be like as big as TikTok or Snap or Facebook? How do you the balance between engagement and sales? Like let's just say, just hypothetically, you don't want to get investment. You want to build a company, a good company, a software as a service platform, but you want to figure out if someone will actually use it. And you know, you have every intent, of course, to make it a good product. So what are the metrics that you would go for that? Because like, let's say you don't want to get investment. Let's say you want to bootstrap it, which may or may not be the right way to go. But how does this sort of this engagement model that you have work itself out?
Okay, so even if you built a B2B SaaS product, engagement will come into play. How much are people in a business are using your product? Because if they are not really using your product, it is just a matter of time that they cancel their subscription. You will have a lot higher churn. But if everyone is addicted to it, if everyone is using it, if it's part of their whole system that it relies on, then there is just no way. So one of the company in New Zealand is Xero.
Use them. I love them.
Yeah. So when Xero started, once again, they didn't make money for so many years, 8-9 years. But that is fine because they had this big vision of becoming that platform. And I don't know how much they're worth, but they'll be worth lots, like probably $50 billion or more. And once again, it's like every small business now relies on Xero to do all their accounting. Because when they started 2007, 8, back then, it was very unique that it automatically synced with your bank account and did everything by itself. And it was all on cloud.
Love Xero.
So when you had to, back in those days, I remember having, because I had the small business and we had to get like a CD from QuickBooks or Intuit, and then we had to load download it on a software. Crazy. And then every time there's a new update, they'll send you a new CD. And this was all on the web. And then when I was traveling in US, I was traveling in Australia, anywhere in the world, I could just go online through a browser, log in, and it was just amazing. It was all on cloud. You could be anywhere, and I could see what company is spending, where we'll be, you know, getting invoices from, when people are paying us, all that stuff. So once again, we were logging in it into it every day. So engagement mattered. And you know, how much people are engaging with your product, it does make a difference. And your churn will be directly proportional to it.
Not convinced yet. but I like
that's fine. That's fine.
I like what you're talking about. I'll tell you why. Because I get asked a lot,
yes,
through what I do for a living, you know, JSY, PR and marketing, about storytelling and growing brands and all that sort of stuff. And I always get asked the question about, when do we spend money on digital ads? What's the digital strategy? And I honestly, I'm not a fan of running ads. I'm not. Cause I know people say you can metricize it. You can see if it works, you get an ROI. Yes. I've never seen a good ROI from digital ads. You can, if it's commodity maybe, but I mean, there's something to what you're saying. I'm a little bit skeptical, because I've been at companies where we had quote unquote engagement, but then when we, you know, said, okay, are you going to pay for this? No one paid for it, which probably then means we really didn't have as much engagement as we thought.
As you thought, yes.
So what is that engagement metric that actually translates into eventually into sales?
I know some people say that it is NPS score, like, you know, net promoter score, but it is so hard to measure NPS score. I know there is another New Zealand based startup. Now they're based in Portland, actually. Ask Nicely. They do net promoter score, that if your net promoter score is high, that means all your customers are promoting it to their friends. But it is so hard when you do a survey. I don't trust surveys because people once again say whatever they want, they click the nearest option, you know.
Right.
I don't trust it. So I don't really know the answer to that. But yeah. As in, like, what is the metrics of how do you, like, for in the case of zero to QuickBooks to zero, we nearly didn't log in as much on QuickBooks as we did on zero. So you're comparing it with your competitor, the engagement factor. So if what is it replacing, you know, what were how people were doing it before your product was
available. Have you heard of Superhuman, the email thing?
Yes. Yes, I have heard of Superhuman.
And I don't remember the CEO's name.
I know it's I think he's an Indian.
He's an Indian guy.
Yeah. Indian guy. Yeah.
And I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
I don't know, but he's very active on Twitter as well.
He is. He did something that was really cool on the survey thing. You know how, you know, you don't like surveys. I'm a skeptical as well. But he created a way to understand product market fit. And I was blown away by this. And the reason I was blown away by this was because he had a systematic way to figure out if the customers that he had, if they were actually attaining this, what he called obviously product market fit, but the product market fit was related to the simple question of, if Superhuman went away, would you be disappointed? And he had like very disappointed, somewhat disappointed, not disappointed at all. And that, I think, is what you're talking about on the engagement. This is a tool, exactly, right? So I took what he did and I created this thing called podcast market fit. I actually like wrote an article for RSS.com.
Yes.
About how do you know if what you're saying on your podcast makes sense, and if, you know, if you've got engagement or whatever. I don't know if he uses NPS or not. But what's fascinating is that the way he called this like an engine, this product market fit engine, because he would constantly churn through it to see if he was getting over this magic threshold. And I don't remember what the number was. But the reason why he did it that way, which again was pretty interesting and actually really astute, was that he didn't want to blow money on go-to-market growth if he didn't have product market fit, quantifiable product market fit, right? Yes. That was like genius. I'm like, wow, like this is the first person that I've seen actually talk about it this way. And he had based his study on someone else that had done, gosh, I don't know, looked at like 100 companies, was trying to figure, again, this product market fit idea is really important. And it all had to do with, if this went away, how disappointed would you be? Which I think is the metric for engagement, or heck, I can't live without this. Like Canva.
Exactly.
Canva is another one down where you are in your neck of the woods. I can't live without Canva. Yeah. Canva is probably the most productive tool I use. It's zero amazing. Is a close second. It's amazing. Like if you look at my show notes, the little graphic, all done in Canva. If you look at this new thing I'm doing called the Story Funnel, all of those graphics are in Canva. It's just so easy to use. And I pay for it. I have a professional account. I gladly give those guys money because it's so cool. And I see what you mean. Like if Canva went away, I'd be very, very upset. I would not going to use Adobe. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Canva is, again, they have got insanely high engagement. Yeah. You know, there are lots of online tools. Even before Canva, there were that you could go on a cloud-based and use something like a Paint type stuff. But they are really bad. The engagement is really low. People never go back on it again. They don't spend time on it. Canva, how much time do you spend on Canva compared to any other online designing tool?
That's the only one I use.
Exactly. But there are. You'd be surprised to know, even before Canva and even after Canva, there are lots of tools out there.
Well, yeah. The other day, I had to edit a PDF file using Adobe whatever. Their Adobe Suite, which don't get me started, Adobe. You pissed me off. I mean, so I'm like, I had to edit this thing. Okay, I'm going to edit it. I had to download their like little dashboard to... Yeah.
That's can you their throw, office behind
throw,
me.
Throw a rock at them for me.
That's their office.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. And the reason I'm not a fan is like I had to set this tool up. They gave me like 7-day free trial. And then it's like some ridiculous amount of money. I literally only need it for like this one thing. And then I'm never going to use it again. It's sort of like there's a lot of tools where I only need it like once or twice. But there's no free version. It's cumbersome. I've got to have this like installed thing on my Mac. They charge me more because I use a Mac. I have to have the pro version versus the other one because of Windows, like if you're on Windows. Yes. And I'm like, really? Like, this is not cool. Like, I don't think this is a good idea. I don't like the fact that it's kind of like when you went to Blockbuster as a kid or when Blockbuster was around and, you know, they charge you a late fee, like, you make all your money on your late fees and you piss your customers off. You're like,
yeah,
you go the way of Blockbuster. Not a fan of Adobe. I'm just not a fan. I'm like, gosh, you guys just, it's hard to deal with you. I had to do this one little thing and I had to like go through, it took me 30 minutes to install this whole silly thing. And then I get a 7-day trial. Really? Like,
I know. It's a very antiquated model. And it's very hard for them to change. Figma is another one.
Yeah, there's Figma.
Descript is another one. I love Descript.
Webflow is another one.
It is, yeah, lots. They have really high engagement. But once again, all these products, whether it's Canva or Xero or Figma or Descript, all these are funded products. They're massive. They're multi-billion-dollar products. They're going to be, if they are not yet, then they're going to be multi-billion-dollar products. So, yeah, that's once again comes down to building something. The thing is that I understand your thing that you were talking about, like building something small and niche, but I am not that guy. My mindset is very different. I am here to make a dent in the universe. I want to build something big. I don't want to build something small.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay. I I want to build something big too, but well, I don't know. Like I've had that in my past. Like I really wanted to do that. I probably one day may do it again, but you know, honestly, just right now in my life, I want to have a good company where I provide a lot of value for my customers.
Yes.
High engagement. They pay me a fair price for some product or service that I have yet to invent. And like, I just run it. Like, that's what I want. I don't need to be Xero or Canva or, you know, Webflow. I don't want that. I honestly, like, I just want to run my little business, and I actually want to get away from charging money for my time. I'd rather not be a consultant. I'd rather have a product and service business where I sell information products and, you know, help people tell better stories, like have the tools that I've like all in my head that like, and I like, now you're making me think more about this.
It's great. The thing is that it comes back down to self-awareness and knowing what you want in life and what you're passionate about. If you are passionate about helping people, then that's great. It is great. So many small businesses in that space will really appreciate the value and the service you provide. So that is great. And you have that self-awareness of what you want and what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Got me thinking now. Why did you have to like ruin my, why'd you have to yuck my yum?
It's like just coming back to Insider, what we are building is has a lot of potential. It's like, you know, most of these apps, whether it's Robinhood or lots of these, they're only targeting the top 3% of the people. That's true. We want to build is for the remaining 80%. Robinhood is just like for US. A lot of them are just US. We are building something that is for even people who don't have a bank account. Even they can participate in the financial markets in some way and be rewarded if they are knowledgeable. So what we are building has a 10 to 15 times the potential to be bigger than Robinhood. So for me, I've always have been ambitious, but previously I didn't have the mindset. In the last few months, I've got the mindset. Something has flipped the switch.
What flipped the switch?
Just, I don't know, just doing more, just going on the journey, believing. It's like 3 years ago, I could have never thought that I'd be an author. But 2 years ago, I wrote my first book. Then last year, I wrote my second book. And this year, I'll probably write my third book. Once again, 2 years ago, I would have never thought I would be running a podcast. But last year, I started my podcast and it's doing really well. So everything that I thought that I cannot do, I don't let perfection come in the way of getting started anymore. And that is the key thing that flipped. I no longer care about what people think. I no longer care about, previously, I'd be like, oh, if I tell people how ambitious I am, that what they laugh at me. But now I don't care. They can laugh all they want. I don't care. I'm going to go on this journey and it's my journey. I'm going to do it. As in, or, you know, give it a shot. Why not?
So if
I feel like making a TikTok, I make a TikTok. I don't worry about what people will say or people will think. If I think of tweeting something, I tweet it. Previously I used to. And that's why I didn't take part in social media for all my life, even though I've been an early user of Twitter and LinkedIn and all those things, but I never posted. It's only in the last 6 months that I've started posting, started sharing, and I can see the result. It's exponentially increased my influence and my own sort of personal brand. And I'm just sharing my journey. I'm not doing anything. I'm not going to any extra effort, and I don't have any specific equipment and shooting cameras and all those sort of things. I just pick up for TikTok. I'm walking to office. I just switch on the camera, I just talk into it, and that's it. And sometimes I get like 60, 70,000 views for a random TikTok, which I think I should not get. But yeah, so it's just being yourself. So if, and that once again comes down to self-awareness, and if it's a lifestyle or a small business you want to do, that's great. It's as long as you know that's what you want. For me, that's not what I want. I want to build that next company that is bigger than Google and Amazon. You know, I want to be that. And that's what I'm like. One of my mentor, he And once again, doing the podcast, I got to speak with the best of the best people in the world. And you are a product of the five people you spend most of your time with. And that also helped me elevate my own self-confidence and self-esteem to that level. And one of the things that David Meltzer said to me when I was having a catch up with him is that he said that, you know, most people who have achieved a lot, whether it's in sports, whether it's LeBron James or whoever, you know, or in movies or film or TV or in business, they all have this belief that I must be what I can be. So that is the belief that now I live with, that I must be what I can be. You know, why should I limit my own mindset? So I no longer do it. Also, one of the books that I read in 2020, I highly recommend it, and it is called It's All in Your Head by Russ. Russ is the rapper. It is amazing. It's very short.
It's all very, in your head.
It's all in your head. And then the subtitle is Get Out of Your Own Way or something like that. But it's I would highly recommend as an audiobook, because since he's a rapper, he just speaks amazingly. Like, because he can, and he has put his music into it and everything. It's just 1 hour and 20 minutes. So it won't take you long. Audiobook, highly, highly recommended.
Hey.
Yes.
I lost you.
Not a problem. Yeah, all good.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. All good, all good.
Yeah, something happened. So, okay. So just, you were talking about the rapper. Just take it from there, and then we're almost done. So
yes. So yeah, just talking about the one of the book I read. And if you want to read a book on mindset, that is just the one book I would recommend. And that is It's All in Your Head by Russ. It's amazing.
Awesome. Awesome. Well,
very short, just 1.5 hour or 1 hour, 20 minutes.
Wow.
He's really good. In fact, he's on multiple podcasts. He goes and speaks, and he's like, he's better than most inspirational gurus out there.
Cool. Well, I think that's a great, great place to end it there, Sam. Thanks for your time, man. This has been a great,
not a problem.
This has been amazing. Now you got me thinking too much. Dangerous when Jari thinks, just so you know. But
it's good, man. It's good. You never know what gifts world would get when you get start thinking. So
yeah, you always got to think.
Yeah, good stuff, man.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur and, frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.